Private Clubs, House Bill 3266 relating to indigent veterans, House Bill 2830 relating to mobile home warranty, Senate Bill 820 relating to executive appointments, Senate Bill 558 relating to chiropractors, Senate Bill 349 relating to unsanitary liquor establishments, Senate Bill 421 relating to liquor fines, Senate Bill 726 relating to people utilities districts, and Senate Bill 529 relating to building codes.
House Committee on State and Federal Affairs come to order. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Denzel.
Here.
Representative Ball. Representative Hammond.
Armand.
Representative Simpson.
Here.
Representative Wilder. Representative Wyatt.
Here.
Here. First, we're going to have a short hearing on Senate Bill 782. Doug Meyer. You and Hal want to do your act together, or do you want to do it separately?
Frank.
Or Frank, I mean. Excuse me, Frank. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. You've been so patient.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Doug Myers, representing U.S. National Bank of Oregon and appearing in support of Senate Bill 782. This would amend an ORS to provide that one of our employees or employees of an employee of a mutual saving bank industry in the state or a savings and loan association could serve on a public committee board commission, even though that public board or commission had an account with the financial institution. We want to amend this because an attorney's general opinion stated that if that board had an account with the financial institution, an employee of that institution could not serve on that board. And I think this is unfair to, we have some good people that do well on various boards. And two examples are cited in my testimony. Our manager in Athena had been appointed to the Umatilla County Housing Authority, and because that authority had a checking account in our bank, he was asked to resign that appointment, again because of the Attorney General's opinion. One of our employees in Monmouth was asked to serve on a public cemetery board. That board had a safe deposit box at a branch, and that safe deposit box had to be closed out before that employee could serve. Since there's a law in the books that states that public funds have to be distributed on an equitable basis within the boundaries of the district, we see no purpose in the present prohibition, and we are always encouraging our employees to serve on boards. Therefore, we ask your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 782.
Thank you, Doug. Dr. Bronner, did you wish to testify?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Frank Bronner, Oregon Mutual Savings Bank. Let me just add a couple of experiences that are perhaps more personal that graphically illustrate the problems that we have. It was never, I don't think, the intention of the law to keep bank employees from serving their communities on public boards and commissions. 7 years ago, I was appointed to the Park Grove School District Budget Board. One of the things I sought to do was maximize our investment income, and consequently, we changed the management practices in the district and did include all financial institutions in Multnomah County in our authorized depository list. Now, as chairman of that Board of Education, I find that only my institution is precluded from an investment opportunity. As a result of this, other bank employees have been discouraged from serving. Additionally, it's a common practice now for public bodies to invest in the state treasury in the investment pool. We don't know whether that money is invested in our institution or not, so we would urge to pass it.
Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Representative Gilmore.
I'd move that we send Senate Bill 782 to the floor on unanimous consent to all due pass.
Representative Gilmore moves that we send Senate Bill 782 to the floor to due pass recommendation that it be placed on the unanimous consent calendar. Discussion. Clerk, call roll.
Representative Denzel.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hammond.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wyatt.
Aye.
Representative
Grinnell.
Aye. Motion passes.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yes.
The unanimous consent calendar now could be a problem. The closer we get to adjournment, the more if you stick it on there, it's going to be 3 or 4 days lying in limbo. And
Senate bill. It's already passed Senate.
No problem. Whenever the old tent goes per block. I sure hate to see a good bill on the list for unanimous consent calendar for a Friday executive session adjourns on Thursday.
Why don't, if that then becomes the case, if you and I don't have any control over that, which we may have, but if that does become the case, then why don't four of us just sign that we want it removed from the unanimous consent calendar and other places?
It still lays over a day.
We'll think about it. Whatever in this, public members, we don't run the public members out. Again, I'll show you the easy ones to run out. I'll be right back.
Thanks, Bill.
We'll be right back.
More efficiently here. Let's look at 558. Senator, you'd like to join us? Everybody, turn to 558, Central 558, and look at your chiropractors.
This is the chiropractor bill, and there are two sets of proposed amendments. One set which lessens the power of the board, and the other set which puts public members on the board. There is no opposition to the bill and no opposition to the amendments.
Did you say
558?
Is it the oral drugs, the chiropractor bill?
No.
558. Is that the amendment?
It's an updating housekeeping of the law. The basic thing that it does is gives more power to the state board to control the profession. I believe there's a representative from the state board here. Do you have any specific questions? One other thing, the testimony was, as far as the new definition in the law, that is the definition that's currently in the administrative rule and was upheld by the Attorney General, so in effect, it's no change.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hammond.
Have we adopted the proposed amendments?
No, we have not.
It's my understanding there is no opposition to the amendments. Chiropractors are good. The OMA has no objections.
Both sets of amendments plug in. Will we adopt the amendments dated 5/19/75?
Both
sets, I guess. They're both identical.
Yeah. Representative Hanneman moves both sets of amendments dated 5/19/75-13. Legislative Council amendments to be in the Senate Bill 558. Is there any discussion?
Did they come to work?
No.
Questions been called for. The clerk can call the roll.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hanneman.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative
Clark. Aye. Carries.
Move we send 558 to the floor to pass as amended.
Representative Hanneman moves that we send B. and Groh Senate Bill 558 to the floor as amended. Is there a discussion?
Yes.
Representative Gilmore.
Is there another bill related to Groh on chiropractic?
Mr. Marquis,
the Chiropractic Association is here if you'd like to ask him some questions.
I would, just a couple.
Jim, you want to step up to the table here? Jim?
Sorry, I'm late. Across 16 minutes.
2 minutes. My question relates to the definition of drugs. Now, this is new language, if I'm not wrong.
Right.
And what is actually the definition of nutritional supplements?
Well,
vitamins?
Yes, we're talking about vitamin supplements, non-prescription vitamin supplements.
Non-prescription vitamin supplements.
Yes, and that's all we're talking about.
Yes.
Chiropractors have given non-prescription vitamin supplements to their patients for many, many years. You can see the old definition of drugs. We've never been challenged on it, but it was felt that since we were dealing with the Practice Act anyway, it should be cleared up at this time. Now, that definition of drugs, incidentally, and that exclusion that we put in there, is taken from some other statutes, and I don't have the material with me tonight, but that's pretty common throughout the statutes, that drugs does not mean vitamin supplements taken orally.
Further questions? Representative Simpson.
Not Mary question, but I was just thinking perhaps we should wait for a vote on this. We have a full committee.
Are there four votes here? Does somebody have real serious reservations about this?
I would sincerely, I don't think I have any problems with it, but I personally would like to take kind of a look at this because of the philosophy basis of this. I want to make sure in my own mind we're not talking related to drugs and just vitamins. I want to make sure in my own mind that we're not abusing something in the statute other than
I withdraw my motion. Representative Hanneman withdraws his motion. Jim, didn't the board some time ago adopt in their rules a definition similar to this? Or is this
no.
The Attorney General made some kind of an opinion recently relating to this whole area?
In all honesty, Representative White, there was an Attorney General's opinion relating to the definition of chiropractic, which is included in the first part of this bill. However, there has not been an Attorney General opinion or any challenge or anything related to this use of drugs, this definition of drugs.
Well, in that case, we'll defer action. Representative Hanneman moves that we defer action until...
I can probably dig some information up for you right away on that.
I think you'll back that for us.
I'll be back in a
moment. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Let's move on to Senate Bill 820. Representative Gilmore?
I'm just going to make one.
Well, one of the problems is that we will lose our quorum if we leave. And
okay. We'll get Representative Magruder to
it. I'm sure he would enjoy very much seeing this bill, but I'm sure that would be appropriate. Let's move to 820. As soon as somebody else comes back, go. Senate Bill 820, requested by, or sponsored by Senator Hurd, Bob Olson from the Senate Majority Office came down and spoke about it. Simply clarifies the law relating to executive appointments and requires an unfavorable vote of four members of the Senate Committee on Executive Appointments for disapproval of appointments. Makes it a little clear. Representative Simpson.
Yeah, you need to be chairman. I just couldn't hear your number.
The Senate Bill 820.
820.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Representative Gilmore. Yeah. Senate Bill 820.
Do we have any opposition to this bill?
None. Period.
Will we send Senate Bill 820 to the floor due pass?
Representative Hanneman moves that Senate Bill 820 be sent to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Everyone familiar with the bill? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative
Hanneman.
Aye.
Representative
Simpson.
Aye.
Representative
Wilhelms.
Aye.
Representative
Wyatt. Aye. Motion carries. Senator Hanneman. Perhaps you'd like to carry this bill. All right.
May I ask the chair, up here, I'll talk to Deanne later.
Bob Olson from the Senate Majority Office, he has.
Did he leave any written testimony up there?
You could, if you call him, yeah, he's got all kinds of stuff there. Representative Simpson, do you have serious reservations about the chiropractor bill?
Yes, I do.
Let's move on to Senate Bill 529.
This is the bill that the City of Eugene requested, and it makes violations of the building code a non-criminal offense, but it makes it a violation. And this will enable them and their local enforcement of the building code to levy fines for violations rather than having to take a person to court on a criminal charge. And it would also permit them to get an injunction against the person and force them to correct the deficiency, where under present law, as a criminal action, they can just fine the person or whatever, and they can't do anything to make them fix the...
Is there a discussion, Representative Hammond?
Deanne, what about the appeal provision that was raised last time by Representative Wilhelms, I believe, and myself, relating to one alternate situation where an appeal could not be made?
We checked this at the end of the last meeting, and I don't have the ORS in my head, but it's covered. You can appeal it to the circuit court for a number of reasons, if they didn't follow proper procedure, or if you thought that they applied the rule wrong, or if you thought that the rule was unfair. You could take the city hearings officer to the circuit court. And this is the same as any decision that's made by municipality. If you like, I can go look it up and read it to you. You feel more comfortable.
Does that answer your question?
Well, another question perhaps. Is there any procedure under the a municipal hearings officer that there is no court remedy or court recourse?
There is no hearing procedure provided for in the bill, so the city, the municipality would set up whatever hearing procedure they wanted, but they could not violate the state law, which allows an appeal. So whatever hearings procedure they decided on, whether it's before the city council or a hearings officer or municipal court, they would have to abide by the state law, which would allow appeal.
Somebody from the city being there, could you step up to the table, please?
My name is Ed Johnson. I'm a legislative liaison for City of Eugene and Lane County. And here's a copy that explains that particular problem that arose. And even if a hearings procedure was adopted by the city in this particular matter, the defendant would have an opportunity for a writ of review. And that would not only challenge the rule, the violation of the rule or law, but he could also attack the procedure in terms of whether the facts substantiated the finding of the hearings officer or the judge.
Are there further questions? So, well, how much do you feel reasonably comfortable with this piece of legislation?
I'm not overwhelmingly enthralled one way or the other.
Well, I'm trying to ascertain.
I would support it.
Can I ask one more question?
Most certainly.
Okay. I'm very sorry to belabor this, but
no problem.
Class B misdemeanor before, now it's a violation, and that's all it says, a violation. And the violation continues day by day. This, I assume, is much more strict and severe.
The purpose of making it a violation rather than criminal is for enforcement. Okay. Criminal violations are much more difficult for this kind of enforcement group.
Okay, I don't care. I'll move forward.
The penalty for a Class B misdemeanor is maximum of $500 and 6 months in jail. And the maximum penalty for a violation is $250.
The problem, of course, is that you're always in court and you're out of court. And the problem is that the problem for which the person was cited criminally is may never be fixed. And that's the purpose of enforcement of the building codes. So.
Well, let me ask one more question then. Is it not more likely under the bill that there'll be more fines imposed since the governing body doesn't have to take the individual to court then?
Well, not necessarily, because I would assume that the local subdivision is only fine when there's a violation. It may not be true that there are more violations. They're more likely to ask, they're more likely to seek compliance. Probably more likely to get compliance.
This would give them the discretion, instead of leaving it up to the judge to maybe give the guy 6 months in jail, to issue a fine of $10 if it's just a minor violation, rather than taking him to court.
Representative Simpson.
When does the appeal kick in? Appeal the decision by a judge. Is there any recourse?
Yes, I'm trying to look it up. It's to the circuit court in the county, and it's after. Okay, if you are issued a citation, this is probably the procedure. You're issued the citation. You can either pay up or request a hearing, and the hearing would either be before a special hearings officer. Heard the building code things, or before the council, or before the municipal court, depending on what you want to do. And if at that point you were unhappy with the ruling, then you could appeal.
And go to the circuit court.
Representative Simpson, do you have a motion on this bill?
I think, Mr. Chairman, we better wait for another member. It's all right.
It's fine. All right. We'll wait.
You got another.
Well, we're kind of running 3266, House Bill 3266. Let's take a quick look at it and see if we can do something here. All right, is there a motion on House Bill 3266?
I should point out this thing in your file. Mr. DeHaven from Project Return in Portland could not appear at any of our previous meetings, so he asked if this be. This information be distributed.
Excuse me just a moment. Is there a discussion on House Bill 3266?
Well, my comment, Mr. Chairman, my county commission just gave a call and they said we like it permissive, but we don't want to be required.
See, gentlemen, are you representative of veterans organizations? Or
yes, my name is Walt Skinner. I'm the director of emergency services and veterans services in Brandon County. We appear here on behalf of the Board of County Commissioners. Table and object no opposition to pass this bill if it is amended to read outside the 6% limitation. If this passes the way it is now, it's going to cost them in revenue about $190,000 a year in actual revenue. This they feel like cannot stand.
About $206,000, actually, according to our figures. Further discussion? Not correct. Mr. Kuzmeski, perhaps you'd like to take the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just momentarily, my name is Harry Kosmeski, United Veterans Groups of Oregon. And I would like to point out, as I had not anticipated testifying today, but I would like to point out that this does clarify the wording of the present statutes, whether it be mandatory or whether it be permissive. The present statutes do state that it must be paid whether the tax is levied or not. That's one thing that's clear. Now, I will say this. Since the hearing, the original hearing, Multnomah County, which was probably the testing grounds for this, did, and it was not done at our request, but it was one which decided to eliminate the fund. And recently, or since the last hearing, they have decided the validity of it by granting a token amount, which was a $15,000 amount towards this Indigent Veterans Fund. They also added the service officer, which to makes us believe that they do agree that there is validity to the original statute. The statute's been on the books for that many years. Consequently, and their total budget for this is roughly, I believe, $43,000 for the projected year, which is an arbitrary figure rather than one in which is determined by the needs of the county. So what we are desirous of, and that is to follow through on the original requirement to provide funds for all Indigent Veterans Funds without making a limitation to it, as Multnomah County has. And with their act of establishing it, they have also set a precedent and established the validity. So we feel that this is sufficient to see that it carries on, and all the other counties so do.
Just out of curiosity, what would you consider, given the circumstances, an appropriate amount for Multnomah County to appropriate for the Indigent Veterans
Fund? Mr. Chairman, it's varied so much in the past years that from $500,000 down to $5,000. So it would be very difficult to come to a figure. The objective, though, of course, would be to establish 1 year with the mandatory requirement of the whatever it is, up to 1/80th of 1%, as it so says, the true cash value. And then decide from then on, I mean, the county would be adjusting from then on each year what was based upon the previous year's expenditures on.
So $500,000 is an appropriate sum, you'd say, for Multnomah County?
That's probably high.
Sure. Well, based on House Bill 3266, the cost per county study given us by legislative fiscal, Multnomah County would be forced to appropriate $853,000.
That would be probably, Mr. Chairman, that'd probably be including their, wouldn't be either, because on this measure it does provide for the administration out of the fund itself, whereas previously it didn't, and that's another thing that is there. But they're using the figure of 1/80th of 1%. A true cash value, whereas they don't have to. I mean, they can have a lesser amount, and I would imagine they would end up with a surplus on the ensuing year, and then they could adjust it for the following year. But all we're doing is, I'm trying to make the point, is that it is there already, and this only clarifies it. And as long as Multnomah County does assume the liability to that degree, then that evidently is enough to establish the right to the measure itself.
Very good. Are there any questions, Mr. Kosmeski? If not, the chair moves that House Bill 3266 be sent before the due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Has it been amended at all?
No. No amendments have been offered. And I don't think
Yes, there's an amendment adopted already by the committee in line page 2, line 20, yeah. After dishonorable or clemency.
I believe that would represent a wellness.
Pardon?
That was your amendment, or was it?
No, I had a question here.
Okay, all right. Is there a discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Gilmore?
No.
Representative Hanlon.
No.
Representative Simpson.
No.
Representative Wilcox.
No.
Representative Wyatt.
Aye. Motion fails. Let's move to Senate Bill 349. Radio recess for three, 7 minutes. On state and federal affairs. 1, 2, 3, 4. Good. Representative Dinsmore will be here momentarily.
Yes, sir. Representative Kulongoski.
Oh, nothing. Go right ahead.
Good.
All right.
I just wanted to check your board.
What do we do? Adopted the amendments, we've been getting votes. What was the problem? Well, we only have 4 people here now.
We'll just wait later.
Okay.
So we haven't done.
We couldn't get 30
there.
Did we get that one out? 349 is out?
No. I cropped out the ones that we
want. 349. Senate Bill 349.
349?
This was Senator Thorne's bill. You'll recall Senator Thorne testified before the committee and had to do with sanitary conditions. Allows the OLCC to cancel or suspend a liquor license for insanitary conditions only after authorized agent or inspector commission personally inspects the establishment. You recall it.
They don't produce and send them.
Yeah, right.
Send the bill out of the new pass recommendation.
Representative Gilmore moves that Senate Bill 349 be sent to the floor to do pass recommendation. Discussion on the bill. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gilmore.
No.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hanlon.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative
Wilcox.
Aye. Representative
Wyatt. Representative Wilcox. Aye. Motion passes. You want to carry it? Or?
Don't matter.
Okay, fine. Why don't you carry it for us?
I'll object.
Okay. Well, we'll just let you debate it on the floor. Yes, Representative Hammond.
Move we send 3266 to the floor.
Representative Hanneman moves that we send House Bill 3266 to the floor with recommendation or just due pass or no recommendation? Due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Chairman.
Representative Dinsmore.
Has the local government committee had a chance to review this measure?
No, I don't believe they've had a measure like that before.
I'd like to move to amend Representative Hanneman's motion to have it go to local government instead of the board.
Representative Dinsmore amends the motion to refer the bill to the Committee on Local Government. Motion.
Mr. Chairman, I think this has substantial impact on local governments, and I just assume that it has some kind of feeling from that committee that they think it's a good idea.
Further discussion? Clerk, call roll.
Representative Dinsmore.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hanneman.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilcox.
Aye.
Representative Brunel.
Aye. Motion passes.
So we
your vote of motion, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, that was just an amendment.
Amendment, okay. You have an amended motion. Motion's before us. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Dinsmore.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hammond.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilkins.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye. Motion passes. How about Senate Bill 529?
We aren't discussing.
Did we discuss it? No vote.
Yes, sir.
To a violation. This moves it from a Class B to a violation, from a misdemeanor to a violation. What was the basis of the testimony behind that? Okay, and this is the difficulty Lane County was having, isn't that correct? I'd accept a motion on that bill. Representative Wilhelms? Representative Wilhelms moves that A and Gross Senate Bill 529 be sent to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Dinsmore.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hammond.
No.
Representative Simpson.
No.
Representative Wilkins.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Aye. Motion passes. How about Senate Bill 497, airports?
Yay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir, Representative Gilmore. Do you have some amendments on this fine bill?
Yes, I do. We've had a lot of discussion on it. The first thing I would like to do is move the amendments submitted.
Trying to find the bill first.
497, which is kind of marked by the May 28, 1975, has to do with page 2, line 14. We're moving actually up the airports, which are under the Board of Aeronautics control, up into section 1, which is maybe established in the zones as an acceptable, accommodating.
Permitted use.
Permitted use.
Okay. That's the first set of amendments, 528, 75, is that it?
Yep.
All right.
Set of amendments A.
All right. Heard the motion from Representative Gilmore.
It's intended, Mayor.
Discussion?
Make it a permitted.
Yeah, permitted use versus conditional use.
Versus conditional use.
If your farm is zone exclusive farm use, you can have an airstrip without going to the Planning Commission to get a conditional use permit.
That's correct.
But
it's still under the Board of Aeronautics. I mean, you know, you ain't gonna go out there and build a 10-mile runway on a farm.
Well, you might be able to, but you'd have to get it approved through the Board of Aeronautics.
So this is allowed to build buildings.
Okay, exclusive farm use buildings.
Yeah.
Without going through the Planning Commission.
That's right.
The way the bill is now, it makes it a conditional use, so it would be allowed, but it would have to be approved by the County Planning Commission.
So then in effect, the farmer and the Board of Aeronautics make a decision to dictate to the local planning authorities.
Well, that's kind of strong language, Representative Wilkins.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
They suggest that that's...
But if you read the amendments very carefully, you'll understand that don't mean it's a personal use. No aircraft is based on a person other than who's owned and controlled by the owner of the airstrip, which would be the guy that owns the farm.
Yeah, Representative Wilhelms, I think if you look up under Section 1 of the bill, under permitted uses, there are a number of things that really aren't dictating to local governments as to what they're going to allow, but these are simply things that are permitted use in an exclusive farm zone, and that's all that we're saying. And I think that perhaps Representative Gilmore, certainly my reasoning behind it, is that they're already under control
by the state through the Board of Aeronautics. And that being the case, it hardly seems to follow that there should be another step in that process. When all of the considerations that are to be made, that is safety, even environmental concerns are met, certainly noise is met as part of that, safety, the health and safety concern by the Board of Aeronautics, who just seemed to me that would follow any other respect.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hanna.
I think it's more important that the Board of Aeronautics have supervision for air control and safety probably than it is just the county permit, which may not consider having a plug-in from the airways and I don't fly, but I think that the board probably has more authority there, practical safety factors. So I'd support the members.
Further discussion?
For
proposed amendments A to Senate Bill 497, they're dated 5/28/75, which would move up, would move the definition of personal use airport up under permitted use in Section 1, deleting it from subsection 2 of the bill. And let's see, I believe we added also the Board of Aeronautics. We expanded that definition, did we not?
Yes.
To conform with the Board of Aeronautics definition of personal use airport.
So the question is on the adoption of these amendments.
That's correct.
Further discussion?
Chairman.
Representative Simpson.
As an excellent pilot, I understand you are, Mr. Chairman. I don't know what line this year is. No aircraft may be based. You give me your definition of based. Would that mean that it's parked there or?
No, based would mean that was to give you a similar kind of a circumstance. Your automobile is based usually in your driveway or your garage, but your friend's automobile, if he came to visit and you said, pull into my garage, it wouldn't be based there.
No. This wouldn't in any way limit visiting a friend at all.
No.
It would prohibit him from say, buying an airplane and leaving it there and taking off from this private thing. It wouldn't do that.
Right. Here's what it says. A personal use airport, go up to the sentence above it, Representative Simpson. Personal use airport is used in this section means an airstrip restricted except for aircraft emergencies to use by the owner or on infrequent and occasional basis by invited guests. That would be as if you had one and you invited me to fly over and see you on a weekend and I did so. And by commercial aviation activities in connection with agricultural operations. In other words, spray planes, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then, remember, I'll tell you why we added the definition, the expanded definition that the Board of Aeronautics had beginning with exceptions. Exceptions to the activities permitted under this definition may be granted through a waiver action by the Aeronautics Division in specific instances. Was if Farmer A and Farmer B, let's say Farmer B didn't have any property that was suitable for an airstrip, or it was more practical that the two went in together and had a strip on Farmer A's property, then the Board of Aeronautics could okay Farmer B to base his plane there also. Further discussion or questions? Yes, Representative Wilhelm.
Is Joe running any problem over the Senate? Did it on its way through the first time?
I really don't know. There are some supporters of the bill. All right.
Not as regards the airport provision. There was general agreement among all the people that was a legitimate farm use and the language was agreed upon.
I'm just concerned we've run into any flack over there going back this way.
There was with dog kennels.
I hate to lose it.
Right, well, I hate to lose it too, and if nothing else, we could always retreat from our amendments if that's what it takes to save the bill in conference. And I have a hunch that if they didn't concur, I might be named to the conference committee. Further discussion? Would you like to join the conference committee? Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll on the amendments.
Representative Dantrell.
That's the first set.
Representative Gilmore. Representative Panem.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm.
Aye.
Representative Ball.
No.
Representative Graham.
Aye, motion passed. Representative Hanlon.
We had another set of amendments submitted to us from the Farm Bureau. The amendments were fairly extensive.
Yes.
I think it's in the interest of the bill not to weight them with something that's going to, I sensed that in the previous discussion on the last amendment. There is one portion of the Farm Bureau amendments that may not restrict it much. I'm not sure whether you all have copies of it, but...
I think we all have copies that have been circulating.
I wonder, before anything else happens, whether there's any objection from the committee to only including about a third of the Farm Bureau amendments, specifically on the first page, the underscored material, saying that the home site, if it's in conjunction with a farm use, within an exclusive farm use zone, fits into this category. That seems like the most reasonable. Some of the others on dust and noise and odor, but if that's not possible, I wondered what the committee's thinking was on stripping the Farm Bureau amendments only to that one specific point. If there was significant objection by the committee, we might have some trouble on the House floor. If there wasn't, I venture to say that we could include that. It is germane, and it seems reasonable that the home site ought to be part of the, if it's within the farm use zone, and if it's used in conjunction with the farm, that it ought to have those provisions applied to it.
May I ask Mr. Fuji a question? Maybe I'd clarify. Mr. Fuji, is there any revenue impact by doing that?
Well, instance where the tax recorder, small claims court or tax court rule, the assessor established the appraised value of the home site at $4,000 up to $5,000. I believe three of the home site involved were $4,000 assessed value, two of them were $5,000, and the plaintiff in the case said where he could not partition the home site and the home away from the rest of the farm because of the little zoning ordinance. And she felt that the value ought to be the farm use value of that, for that class of land, and the judge agreed with him. And so there would be to that degree, but in a farm area, why, the shift would probably go on the balance of the farmland and farm equipment and that sort of thing.
I see. Thank you. Why don't you move the amendments, Representative Hanneman, okay, to that point, and we'll just see how it goes.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would move then. Do you all have copies of the Farm Bureau amendments? They were in the book, and I thought they were originally, and the committee staff got the extra copies.
That's not these from Legislative Council?
No, it's not.
It says, submitted by Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, May 16, 1975. And you're suggesting to adopt the amendments on page 1.
Accepting sub 2 in the beginning part in order to keep pace with the suggestion, we have to restore the second line in sub 2, which says, including that portion of such lands under, restore that and delete the word and, which was to be included. Keep the underscored material on page 2 and keep the existing material down to and including the language that says in line 4 on page 2, as I understand it, and delete the rest of the page.
All right. Dean, you have a question?
Also, delete the second line of page one.
The second line?
Yes, under the title or the references to ORSs.
Yeah, you did have in 215, 203, and the 213.
Oh, I see.
Okay, we'll make that technical.
Okay, we'd have to, that's a technical.
Okay, we can take care of that technical amendment.
And I would move, Mr. Chairman, that, with this good effort, I would support that that might be acceptable.
Discussion, Representative Wilhelms and Representative Wyatt, and then Ms. Kinsey.
What's the reason for them?
These amendments?
Yeah.
In some areas now, the home site is not considered a part of the farm use, even though it's connected to the farm use of the farm property.
What kind of tax breaks?
I'd have to defer to Mr. Fruity.
The question is on the tax rate.
Yes, what kind of a tax break was the question?
Well, it would depend on the total value again. It would just reduce the value by the value that the home site has been appraised by the assessor.
Mr. Fuji also, I believe, said to the committee just a moment ago, Representative Wilhelms, that in all likelihood in rural communities that would then be shifted back on the rest of the farmstead, so.
I think generally where the bulk of the property or all of the property is in the district would be farmland or farm equipment, livestock, like this would be where the shift would go. The home site is generally a fairly small percentage of the total value of the farm.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wyatt.
For those who are really truly interested in the bill, I think you made a tragic mistake because I can see where there would be substantial opposition to that provision.
I share your concern somewhat, Representative Wyatt, from the standpoint, I believe the Revenue Department did testify in opposition to that particular part of the amendments that the Farm Bureau Federation suggested. Chairman? Yes, Representative Dinsmore. I think if we were to adopt Mr. Fuji and the Farm Bureau's suggestion here on this particular section, we would probably not cause much of a shift. It's true in an essentially farming community. But if you have, for example, a school district that is composed of a small city and farming areas around it, I think you're going to find a shift. You're going to find a shift from the farm home site to the homeowners within the small city. And without speaking to the merits of this particular proposal, I think it's a safe bet that there might be a few people from the Revenue Committee come out of the chute.
Representative Hanna, are you disclaiming your
comment?
You're getting wound up, excuse me, Representative Wilhelms.
It was not a signal, Mr. Chair.
Was there how is this signal? Go ahead, Representative Wilhelms.
Was there a bill that did this?
No, we didn't become aware of the test, the case that was in the court of assessment pretty well along.
Is that this one?
Yes, this is the. Although this came in December, it wasn't called our attention to the bottom, although they were very large.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Simpson.
I think we share this concern too. No way do I wish to jeopardize this airport bill. And if what Representative Denton says is true, then I think we stand a good chance of doing that. I think there has been an awful lot of active interest in this airport bill. And I don't think in any way should we jeopardize that. And yet I see what this is intended, how this is intended. Perhaps we could get this in something else. In no way do I wish to jeopardize it.
Sir, did all Representative Hanneman in agriculture?
I don't believe there is. I don't believe there is. Not relating to these sections, relating to taxation or land use specifically.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wyatt.
I'll just make two comments. First, the bill as it came to us is a good bill and accomplished a specific purpose. The vehicle, another purpose, is that we can reach general agreement on. Put in the Farmstead exemption, you're going to lose my vote on the bill, and you're going to lose several other votes.
Homesite.
Spit it out. And I just don't think it's worth jeopardizing. In essence, it's a very good bill.
Mr. Chairman, just for the thought of it, of course, the positive outlook toward the amendments would be that if, should the bill fail to receive support on the House floor, reconsideration and deletion then again of the Farm Bureau amendment could be made before the session ends within a matter of hours if the bill reappear back on the House floor should it not fly, or should it pass the House and fail to be concurred in the Senate. A conference committee could delete the Farm Bureau amendments. So it depends on the effort, I think, that the members of any particular program put forth to get it passed.
I wanted to point out what.
Good try, Representative. I appreciate.
Unless there's a motion to send it to some other committee.
If you do consider this amendment, I would recommend that you don't delete up in top of two, including that portion of lands under, because the result of that is saying that the land under the home is exclusive farm use, but the land under the barn isn't. And is that right?
No, the law as it's originally is says that the land under the building is farm use. Our intent of the amendment was to get the farm building part of farm use also, but because there's objection from the revenue department, we don't want to touch anything that's controversial right at this point.
No. We don't consider this controversial.
Further discussion on the amendment. Clerk call the roll.
Representative Dinsmore. Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Hanneman.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm.
No.
Representative Wyatt.
No.
Representative Brown.
That stuck me, didn't it? No.
Well, what's your feelings? Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Representative Hanneman.
How do you feel about the other portion of the amendments, which the way the law is now says that you can't plow your land on one side of the fence if the dust blows across 10 feet on the other side? Would that defeat this bill that everyone supports also?
I don't know. I'm just hesitating to put the lights on the tree, as Representative Magruder often said.
Speaking of light.
But, right, I understand. Now, we did take your amendments, by the way, Representative Gilmore, to kind of change the subject, because we're going to run out of time here in a minute. And we consulted a number of people, and Mr. Smith from the Speaker's office also consulted with some people, and we understand that those amendments essentially aren't going to damage the bill. That is, it looks like we're going to get the support that we need. That's right. And the governor's office is supportive of those amendments.
Okay.
So why don't we go ahead, Representative Gilmore, move his amendments.
Well, since we were so dastardly defeated on the Farm Bureau amendment,
You weren't.
Mr. Chairman.
It's a close vote.
I know, but I would move legislative council amendment dated May 22nd, 75, number 13, and in the discussion, if I may continue, was the threat.
Accept the motion.
Was the, was this other thing that we had some problem with in technical wording clarified to be changed, or was it accepted as?
What was that problem?
Remember our discussion having to do with the, or the threat or imminence thereof? Do we had some discussion?
Another why I hope that I had to do. Change that a little more specifically, because I can let you do it.
Okay.
And I won't forget that. I didn't know I was, if I was supposed to, I apologize, I didn't.
No, no, we were discussing it.
All right, we're discussing, Representative Magruder said that that was simply some language he borrowed somewhere else in the same provisions, and that was not.
Mrs. Seymour from Legislative Council adopted that from the same provision which applies to exclusive farm use zone land. So I suppose we should either adopt this language, or if we change this language, we need to change the other language to be consistent. So it would be my suggestion we adopt this language.
You got lots of legislative intent.
All right, as long as we've got a lot of legislative intent. Any further discussion on the motion? Clerk Colerole.
Representative Dethmore.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Camden.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm.
Aye.
Representative Brunel.
Aye, motion passed. Representative Gilmore.
I would move the amended A and Gross Senate Bill 497, be sent to the House floor, do pass.
I personally would prefer to put it on unanimous consent calendar, and if there is floor vote to pull it off, then there is, and we can go through the procedure. If it is your wish that that might be a futile effort in delaying, then I would not move that. All right. Representative Gilmore moves that Senate Bill 497, A and Gross, be sent to Florida to do pass recommendation as amended. Discussion on the motion?
Question.
Clerk Colerole.
Representative Dethmore.
Aye.
Representative Gilmore.
Aye.
Representative Camden.
Aye.
Representative Simpson.
Aye.
Representative Wilhelm.
Aye.
Representative Brunel.
Aye, motion passes. I'll carry it. Hearing county fees, we're due on the House floor right now. Didn't we have a hearing? Didn't we have a hearing on county fees? First witness. How many people are here on Senate Bill 500?
Joe, thank you very much.
Aren't you, wrong proposition, motion to take up the three?
I don't know, short session, but you can reach me at 4:30.
Yes, it very well may be, very short session. I think I'm going to risk that. I'm going to recess the committee for the session that's going to begin, and if possible, reconvene at 4:30 or 5 o'clock or whenever the session is ended, assuming we don't go at a late hour. If we go at a late hour, I won't reconvene the committee until Friday. We're recessed.